10. Marcia greeted them with relief as they filed into the bright little living room.
"Just in time," she told Hamilton, standing on tiptoe to kiss him. In her apron and print dress, she was a pretty slender shape, warm and fragrant.
"Go wash and sit down."
"Can I help with anything?"
Silky asked politely.
"Not a thing. Jack, take her coat."
"That's all right,"
Silky said.
"I'll just toss it in the bedroom."
She trotted off, leaving them briefly alone.
"This is the damnedest thing,"
Hamilton said, following his wife into the kitchen.
"You mean her?"
"Yeah."
"When did you meet her?"
"Last week, friend of McFife's."
"She's cute."
Bending down, Marcia lifted a steaming casserole from the oven.
"So sweet and fresh."
"Darling, she's a whore."
"Oh."
Marcia blinked.
"Really? She doesn't look like a... what you said?"
"Of course she doesn't. They don't have them here."
Marcia brightened.
"Then she isn't. She can't be."
Exasperated, Hamilton blocked her way as she started into the living room with the casserole.
"She is.
In the real world, she's a barfly, a professional pickup hanging around bars soliciting men and drinks."
"Oh, really?"
Marcia said, unconvinced.
"I don't believe it. We had a long talk over the phone. She's a waitress or something. She's a charming child."
"Darling, when her apparatus was intact..."
He broke off as Silky reappeared, pert and wholesome looking in her schoolgirl's outfit.
"I'm surprised at you,"
Marcia said to her husband as she skipped back into the kitchen.
"You ought to be ashamed of yourself."
Lamely, he shambled off.
"Oh, the hell with it."
Picking up the evening Oakland Tribune, he threw himself down on the couch, opposite Silky, and began scanning the headlines. Feinberg announces new discovery, heralding permanent asthma cure. The article, on page one, showed a picture of a smiling, plump, balding, white-clad doctor, straight from a mouthwash ad. The article told about his world-shaking discovery. Column one, page one. Column two, page one, was a lengthy article on recent archaeological discoveries in the Middle East. Pots, dishes, and vases had been unearthed. An entire Iron Age city had been located. Mankind watched with bated breath. A kind of morbid curiosity overcame him. What had become of the Cold War with Russia? For that matter, what had become of Russia? Rapidly, he scanned the remaining pages. What he discovered made the hackles of his neck rise. Russia, as a category, had been abolished. It was just too painfully unpleasant. Millions of men and women, millions of square miles of land, gone. What was there instead? A barren plain? A misty emptiness? A vast pit? In a sense, there was no front section to the newspaper. It began with section two, the women's world. Fashions, social events, marriages and engagements, cultural activities, games. The comic section? Part of it was there, and part of it wasn't. The fun-loving joke comics remained, the kiddies' humor strips, but the detective, tough guy, and girly strips were absent. Not that it mattered much, except that the peculiar expanse of bare white newsprint seemed somehow unsatisfying. That was probably what Northern Asia looked like now. A kind of titanic strip of blank newsprint, where once millions of lives had been lived, for better or worse. Worse, as far as an overweight, middle-aged woman named Edith Pritchett was concerned. Russia bothered her. Like a buzzing gnat, it made her life unpleasant. Come to think of it, he hadn't seen any flies or gnats, or spiders, or pests of any kind. By the time Mrs. Pritchett was done, this was going to be a mighty pleasant world to live in, if anything remained.
"Doesn't it bother you,"
he said suddenly to Silky,
"that there isn't any Russia?"
"Any what?"
Silky asked, looking up from her magazine.
"Forget it."
Throwing down his newspaper, he plodded moodily out of the living room and into the kitchen.
"That's the part I can't stand," he said to his wife.
What's that, darling?
They don't care!
Gently, Marcia pointed out.
There never was any Russia, so how can they care?
But they should care. If Mrs. Pritchett abolished writing, they wouldn't care. They wouldn't miss it. They wouldn't notice it was gone.
If they didn't notice it,
Marcia said thoughtfully,
then what does it matter?
He hadn't thought about that. While the two women set the dinner table, he did so.
It's worse, he told Marcia.
That's the worst part of it. Edith Pritchett tampers with their world. She remakes their lives, and they don't even notice. It's terrible.
Why?
Marcia flared up.
Maybe it's not so terrible.
Lowering her voice, she nodded toward Silky.
Is that terrible? Was she so much better before?
That's not the point. The point is...
He followed angrily after her.
Now, it's not Silky. It's somebody else. A wax dummy Mrs. Pritchett made up to take Silky's place.
It looks like Silky to me.
You never saw her before.
Thank God,
Marcia said fervently. A slow, dreadful suspicion began to creep over him.
You like this,
he said softly.
You actually prefer this.
I wouldn't say that, Marcia said evasively. You do. You like these improvements.
At the kitchen door, Marcia halted, her hands full of spoons and forks.
I've been thinking about it today. In many ways, everything is much cleaner and neater. Not so messy. Things are, well, so much simpler, more orderly.
Well, there aren't so many things.
What's wrong with that?
Maybe we'll turn out to be objectionable elements. Have you thought about that?
Gesturing, he continued.
It's not safe. Look at us. We've been remolded already. We're sexless. Do you like that?
There was no immediate answer.
You do! Hamilton said aghast. You prefer it!
We'll talk about it later,
Marcia said, going off with the silverware. Grabbing hold of her arm, Hamilton roughly pulled her back.
Answer me! You like it her way, don't you? You like the idea of a great, fat, fussy old lady cleaning sex and nastiness out of the world?
Well,
Marcia said thoughtfully,
I think the world could use some cleaning up, yes. And if you men haven't been able to, or don't want to do it...
I'm going to let you in on something, Hamilton told her fiercely. As fast as Edith Pritchett abolishes categories, I'm going to restore them. The first category I'm going to restore is sex. As of tonight, I'm going to reintroduce sex into this world.
Yes, you would, wouldn't you? That's something you want. That's something you've been mulling about constantly.
That girl in there?
Hamilton jerked his head toward the living room. Silky was happily arranging napkins around the dinner table.
I'm going to haul her downstairs and go to bed with her.
Darling,
Marcia said practically.
You can't.
Why not?
She's...
Marcia gestured.
She's not equipped.
Don't you care a damn bit?
But it's absurd. It's like talking about purple ostriches. There just isn't any such thing.
Striding into the living room, Hamilton took firm hold of Silky's hand.
Come along, he ordered her. We're going to the audiophile room and listen to Beethoven quartets.
Astonished, Silky came stumbling involuntarily after him.
But what about dinner?
The hell with dinner,
he answered, pulling open the door to the stairs.
Let's get down there before she abolishes music.
The basement was cold and damp. Hamilton turned on the electric heater and pulled down the window blinds. As the room warmed to cheery friendliness, he opened the doors of the record cabinet and began dragging out armloads of LPs.
What do you want to hear?
He demanded belligerently. Frightened, Silky lingered by the door.
I want to eat, and Marcia fixed such a lovely dinner.
Only animals eat,
Hamilton muttered.
It's unpleasant. Not nice. I've abolished it.
I don't understand,
Silky protested mournfully. Clicking on his amplifier, Hamilton adjusted the elaborate network of controls.
"What do you think of my rig?" he inquired.
"Very attractive."
Push-pull parallel output, flat up to 30,000 CPS, 4 15-inch woofers, 8 theater horns, tweeters. Crossover network at 400 CPS, transformers wound by hand, diamond styli, and gold liquid torque cartridge. As he placed an LP on the turntable, he added, "Motor able to spin a weight of 10 tons without slowing below 33 and a third. Not bad, eh?"
"Wonderful."
The music was Daphnis and Chloe. A good half of his LP collection was mysteriously absent. Mostly modern atonal and experimental percussive works. Mrs. Pritchett preferred the good standard classics, Beethoven and Schumann, the heavy orchestral stuff, familiar to the bourgeois concert-goer. Somehow, the loss of his precious Bartok collection drove him into more of a frenzy than anything else so far. It had an intimate quality, a meddling with the deepest layers of his personality. There was no living in Mrs. Pritchett's world. She was even worse than Tetragrammaton.
"How's that?"
he asked automatically, as he turned down the lamp almost to nil.
"Not in your eyes now, eh?"
"It never was, Jack,"
Silky said, troubled. A dim fragment of recollection seeped into her purified mind.
"Golly, I can hardly see my way around. I'm afraid I'll fall."
"Not very far,"
Hamilton retorted sardonically.
"What do you want to drink? It just so happens that I have a fifth of scotch somewhere around here."
Whipping open the liquor cabinet, he groped expertly inside. His fingers closed around the neck of a bottle. Rapidly drawing it forth, he bent to locate glasses. Oddly, the bottle didn't feel right. A closer examination confirmed it. He wasn't holding a fifth of scotch after all.
"Let's make it cream de menthe," he corrected, resigned.
In some ways, it was better.
"Okay."
Daphnis and Chloe swelled out luxuriantly into the darkened room as Hamilton conveyed Silky to the couch and sat her down. Obediently, she accepted her drink and dutifully sipped, a blank and humble expression on her face. Prowling intently around, Hamilton made the various fine adjustments of the connoisseur, straightening a wall print here, turning up the amplifier a trifle, lowering the lamp still more, fluffing up a pillow on the couch, assuring himself that the door to the stairs was closed and locked. Upstairs, he could hear Marcia stirring around. Well, she had asked for it.
"Just close your eyes and relax," he ordered wrathfully.
"I'm relaxed."
Silky was still afraid.
"Isn't this enough?"
"Sure," he muttered morbidly. "That's great. Here's an idea. Try taking off your shoes and putting your feet up on the couch. You get a different impression of Ravel when you do that."
Silky obediently kicked off her white loafers and lifted her bare feet up and under her.
"That's nice,"
she said wanly.
"A lot better, isn't it?"
"Much."
All at once, a vast, overwhelming sorrow overcame Hamilton.
"It's no use," he said, defeated. "It can't be done."
"What can't be done, Jack?"
"You wouldn't understand."
For a time, the two of them were silent. Then slowly, quietly, Silky reached out and touched his hand.
"I'm sorry."
"So am I."
"It's my fault, isn't it?"
"Well, sort of, in a way. A very diffuse and abstract way."
After a hesitant pause, Silky asked,
"Can I ask you something?"
"Sure, anything."
"What?"
Her voice was so faint that he could hardly hear it. She was gazing up at him, eyes large and dark in the dim light of the room.
"Jack, would you kiss me? Just once?"
Putting his arms tightly around her, he pulled her to him and, lifting up her small, sharp face, kissed her on the mouth. She clung to him, fragile and light, and so terribly, humiliatingly thin. Clutching her, holding her with all his strength. He sat for an endless interval, until at last she moved away from him, a tired, forlorn figure, almost lost in the murky gloom.
"I feel so darn bad,"
she faltered. "Don't."
"I feel so empty. I ache all over. Why, Jack? What is it? Why should I feel so bad?"
"Let it go," he said tightly.
"I don't want to feel this way. I want to give you something, but I don't have anything I can give you. I'm nothing but an emptiness, aren't I? A sort of vacant place."
"Not totally." In the darkness, there was a flicker of motion. She had gotten to her feet. Now she stood in front of him, blurred and indistinct, in a sudden rapidness of motion. When he looked again, he found that she had slid hastily out of her clothing. It was piled up by him in a small, neat heap.
"Do you want me?"
she asked hesitantly.
"Well, in a sort of theoretical way."
"You can, you know."
He smiled ironically. "Can I?"
"You may, then."
Hamilton lifted up her bundle of clothes and handed them to her.
"Get dressed and let's go upstairs. We're wasting our time and dinner's getting cold."
"It's no use."
"No,"
he answered achingly, trying not to see the barren plainness of her body.
"No use at all, but you did your best. You did what you could."
As soon as she had dressed, he took her hand and led her to the door. Behind them, the phonograph still blared out the futile, lush tangle of sound that was Daphnis and Chloe. Neither of them heard it as, unhappily, they toiled up the stairs.
"I'm sorry I let you down,"
Silky said.
"Forget it."
"Maybe I can make it up some way. Maybe I can..."
The girl's voice faded out, and in his hand, the presence of her small, dry fingers ebbed into nothingness. Shocked, he spun and squinted down into the darkness. Silky was gone. She had dimmed out of existence. Baffled, incredulous, he was still standing rooted to the spot when the door above him opened, and Marcia appeared at the top of the stairs.
"Oh,"
she said, surprised.
"There you are. Come on up. We have company."
Company, he muttered.
"Mrs. Pritchett. And she's brought all kinds of people with her. It looks like a regular party. Everybody laughing and excited."
In a stupefied haze, Hamilton climbed the remaining steps and entered the living room. A babble of voices and motion greeted him. Looming over the group of people stood the great lump of a woman in her tawdry fur coat, ornate hat flapping its feathered grotesqueness, peroxide blonde hair clinging in metallic piles to her plump neck and cheeks.
"There you are,"
Mrs. Pritchett cried happily as she caught sight of him.
"Surprise, surprise."
Lifting up a bulging square pasteboard carton, she confided loudly,
"I brought over the dearest little cakes you ever saw, regular treasures, and the most wonderful glazed fruit you ever..."
"What did you do with her?" Hamilton demanded hoarsely, advancing toward the woman. "Where is she?" For a moment, Mrs. Pritchett was perplexed. Then the mottled wads of flesh that were her features relaxed into a smile of crafty slyness.
"Why, I abolished her, dear. I eliminated that category. Didn't you know?"